Chapter 29. Spire Albion, Habble Landing. 4 weeks ago, Bridget had lived a quiet and sensible existence, she thought. She worked with her father, took care of their customers, and often visited her poorer neighbours, bringing gifts of meat that hadn't sold and needed to be eaten. She attended school every other day, and occasionally ventured to the market to purchase what their home and business needed. She had been to the amphitheatre half a dozen times to attend musical concerts, and gone bi-weekly to services at the Church of God in Heaven. And now, she thought, she was wandering through a strange and possibly dangerous Habble, her only companions, a cat who regarded himself as the world's preeminent being, and a rather reedy girl who kept up a steady, muttered conversation with her jar of used crystals. What if she got lost? What if she came upon more footpads? What if she found the enemy before she made contact with the local cats? At least in Habble Morning, she'd had the implied authority of her uniform to hide behind. Now she wore only her regular clothes. Granted, the wide sleeves of her blouse concealed the gauntlet on her left hand almost completely, but she'd scarcely had time to learn to discharge one without killing someone by accident, much less doing so by conscious intention. She doubted her ability to hit a target more than 3 or 4 feet away if it came to a genuine combat situation. She wasn't sure whether that made her better off than if she was completely unarmed, or worse. Raoul rode on her shoulder, his head held at a high, cocky angle, as though he had recently conquered the place, laying a benign gaze upon his realm and subjects as their little party walked through one of the wider and more crowded tunnels of the Habble's first level. The cat's nose never stopped twitching, and his ears flicked around alertly. "Honestly, Raoul," Bridget murmured, "are you certain you're watching for the local cats?"
"Even the sharpest eyes cannot see what is not there, little mouse," Raoul replied serenely. "Keep walking. Over toward those cooking places."
"I bought you a dumpling not half an hour ago," Bridget protested.
"Those smell good to me, and I want to smell them some more," Raoul said. "Any other cat worth the name would feel exactly the same way. Perhaps we will see them there."
"And perhaps, as long as we're there, you'll have another bite."
"Perhaps I shall."
"I should make you carry your pay around yourself."
"Metal circles," Raoul scoffed. "They are a human madness. A human should deal with them."
"He's right," Folly put in, from where she walked so close to Bridget's flank that Bridget feared to turn toward her too quickly, lest she strike her with an elbow in the process. "Money is madness. A delusion. Illusion. It's not made of metal, really. It's made of time. How much is one's time worth? If one can convince enough people that one's time is an invaluable resource, then one has lots and lots of money. That's why one can spend time.
Only one can never get a refund."
"I see," Bridget said, though she didn't. "Well, in any case, shall we go over there?" Folly leaned down and whispered to her jar,
"She spoils the cat."
"A privilege I do not give to just anyone," Raoul said smugly.
Folly suddenly stopped in her tracks and let out a harsh hiss. Bridget turned to the other girl as pedestrians nearly walked into her back and began to paw impatiently around her. The etherealist's apprentice was standing with her back, ramrod straight, her mismatched eyes very wide.
"Folly," Bridget said.
"It's here," Folly said in a whisper. "It's watching. We would tell Bridget about it if we could."
They were getting a few glares and mutters now, as they slowed the foot traffic around them. Bridget didn't mind glowers and low curses, but she found herself very much concerned that their disruption of foot traffic called a great deal of attention to the two young women. It was quite the opposite of operating covertly. She took Folly's arm firmly and guided the girl onto a side path.
"Folly,"
she asked. What's here? What's watching?
Bridget doesn't know about the grim captain's visitors,
Folly said, her eyes darting around.
But they're looking at us right now.
Bridget blinked. Captain Grimm's visitor? Do you mean that Commodore?
The one with the very large hat,
Raoul added helpfully.
She doesn't understand,
Folly said to the jar.
These came before that, when the master treated the grim captain on the day before they met.
I'm a bit confused, Bridget said politely. Master Ferris treated Captain Grimm before meeting him? Folly whispered to her jar.
If she keeps repeating everything I say, this is going to take much more time.
She glanced around them and slowly exhaled.
There, I think, yes, there.
We're alone now.
Folly, I need you to help me understand, Bridget said. Are you talking about Aurorans?
Folly blinked several times and then said, her tone thoughtful,
She brings up an excellent point.
Possibly. I feel awful, and I think I'll sit down.
The Etherealist's apprentice sat down on the ground as if entirely exhausted, her knees curled up to her chest, her eyes sunken. She leaned her head back against the spire stone wall.
Miss Folly, Bridget said, are you quite all right?
Folly patted her jar as a mother might a restless child and said,
It's all right.
Bridget doesn't know how hard it is to hear things.
Tell her that we're just tired and we need a moment.
I see, Bridget said. She tilted her head, studying the other girl thoughtfully. She'd regarded Folly as someone who must have fallen into some kind of premature dotage, but her answers were canny enough, if phrased quite oddly. Folly had said that she would have told Bridget something if she could, though by the simple act of saying as much, she had accomplished it.
I noticed, Bridget said, that Master Ferris seems to have difficulties with doorknobs.
She doesn't know that the master is far too brilliant for such things, Folly said, nodding.
And you, Bridget continued thoughtfully, seem to have difficulty speaking directly to others.
Oh, she uses her eyes and what's behind them as well,
Folly said to her jar with a weary little smile.
That's two in 1 week. Perhaps I should write down the date.
Remarkable, Bridget said. Miss, I am very sorry if I said anything to offend you, or if I haven't paid attention when you meant me to hear something. I didn't understand.
Raoul leaned down to peer at Folly.
She seemed no more ridiculous to me than most humans.
At that, Folly looked up and beamed a smile at Raoul.
Oh, he doesn't know that that's the kindest thing anyone's said about me since the master called me a gnatcatcher.
And now we're back to being very odd, Bridget said. But I shall try to make allowances for it, since we're to be working together. Bridget felt Raoul's paw tap her cheek, and she turned her head in that direction. The side lane where they'd stopped was dimly lit, even by the standards of Habble Landing. It reminded her of the tunnel where the footpads had lurked. For a second she didn't see whatever Raoul had warned her about. But then there was a flicker of light, and she saw a pair of green-gold eyes staring at them from the shadows, and around them was a grey furred shape. A cat. Bridget made a basket of her arms, and Raoul leapt down to them and then to the ground. The ginger cat ambled calmly down the alley toward the other feline. Then he sat down a few feet away from the other cat, ignored him entirely, and began to fastidiously groom his paws. The stranger cat emerged from the gloom and sat down a bit closer to Raoul. Then he, too, promptly ignored the other cat and began grooming.
Oh, Folly asked ajar, do you think Bridget knows if that is cat diplomacy?
They've never explained it to me, but it's more of a power struggle, I think, Bridget replied. I'm fairly sure it's about establishing which of them is the least impressed by the other.
I wonder what is being established. A more capable cat is never impressed by a less capable cat.
Oh,
Folly said.
I see what she's saying now. They're seeing which of them is the proudest.
Bridget sighed and nodded. Or at least which has the biggest ego.
By ignoring each other, Folly said.
Yes. Folly frowned down at her jar.
I don't know all about cats like Bridget, but it seems to me that this could be a prolonged contest.
It often is.
I wonder what we should do to hurry things along,
Folly said to her jar.
Hurry two cats? Bridget asked, smiling at Raoul. No, the cats didn't come to our Habble looking for our help, Miss Folly.
This is their custom, their way. We shall wait.
We shall wait for 3 hours, apparently, Folly yawned to her jar of crystals. One learns patience working in a vattery, Bridget said. It doesn't matter how much one wants a batch to be done. It won't happen any faster. It's the same with cats.
Folly leaned down to her jar and whispered,
I don't think cats grow in vats, but we shouldn't say so aloud, for that might hurt her feelings and be unkind.
You know what I meant, Bridget said, though that was very amusing.
The other girl smiled downward, clearly pleased.
So few people understand my jokes. Usually they just give me very strange looks.
I'm the girl who associates with cats, Bridget said. Please believe that I know precisely the look you mean.
Bridget checked on Raoul again, but the two cats remained locked in their war of mutual indifference.
I've been thinking about what the Spyrarch said earlier, about the nature of Master Ferris's mission.
She means secret mission,
Folly said to her jar.
Did he tell you what he was up to?
Folly traced a fingertip along the outside of the jar. It might have been Bridget's imagination, but the tiny crystals inside seemed to give off the faintest glow of light where Folly's fingertip touched the glass.
Bridget doesn't understand the master very well,
she said.
He guards knowledge like a bank guards coins. So, you don't exactly know what he's looking for either.
Folly smiled faintly without looking up.
He gave me few pennies.
They're quite frightful.
Bridget frowned.
But surely it isn't difficult to deduce that he means to locate the Auroran infiltrators and foil their plans.
Bridget's logic seems sound, Folly said. I was thinking almost the same thing.
Bridget nodded.
We're seeking the help of Albion cats to thwart the Aurorans. But they've been so successful at keeping their movements concealed that we still have no idea exactly where they are. That seems a remarkable accomplishment, to descend through the vents of half the Habbles of a spire without being observed by a cat somewhere. They must be doing something to make sure they go unseen. Do you think it possible that the Aurorans are also using cats as scouts, Folly?
The Etherealist's apprentice ducked her head a little at the mention of her name. The pitch of her voice dropped to a bare, low whisper.
Not cats. Not cats.
Not cats, Bridget said.
It's something else, then. Something that frightens you.
It's a terrifying penny,
Folly said to her little jar.
I'm slightly mad, but not a fool.
If Bridget knew, she'd be as afraid as I am.
Bridget felt a chill run neatly up her spine and leaned toward Folly, speaking more quietly.
You mean something from...
Her mouth felt quite dry and she swallowed.
From the surface?
It wasn't unheard of for the creatures of the surface to gain access to a spire. In fact, the smaller beasts did so regularly. A spire contained literally hundreds of miles of ventilation tunnels and ducts, water channels, cisterns, sewage channels, and compost chambers. Metal grates were regularly installed where they could be, but constant contact with the outer atmosphere degraded their cladding and eventually left them vulnerable to iron rot. Cats did far more to protect the residents of any spire than humans realized, by hunting and killing such intruders. Granted, the lovely little bullies would have done so in any case, and not simply for food, but because they loved the hunt. Most folk tended to assume that cats preyed solely upon rodents and the like, which was certainly true. But in fact, by working cooperatively, a tribe of cats could stalk and bring down prey considerably larger than themselves. Sometimes, however, something too large and too dangerous for cats to handle managed to enter a spire's tunnels. That was why every Habil employed verminositors, men and women who hunted such predators professionally, who maintained and repaired the defensive grates, and who tracked and killed nightmarish interlopers before the beasts could begin hunting the people of Aspire. But those were wild creatures. If somehow the Aurorans had managed to train something from the surface to fight with their military. There were many stories and books and dramas written around the concept of some misguided soul attempting to tame the creatures of the surface, to train them to do their will. Such fictional figures universally met an identical fate, agony and death at the hands of their would-be pets, generally after a great loss of life. Wild beasts could not be tamed. They could not be controlled. That was, after all, what made them wild.
"They don't belong here, and they want to destroy us," Folly said to her jar,
her eyes sick but her tone matter-of-fact.
"All of us. They don't care what spire we call home."
"Well," Bridget said, "if the Aurorans truly are playing with that fire, it's only a matter of time before it burns them."
"I once had a dream of the world," Folly said.
She gave Bridget's face a quick flicking glance before looking down again.
"And it all burned."
Bridget felt a shiver gather at the nape of her neck, and she said nothing. She looked away, back toward Raoul, waiting.